Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, it was kind of chilly last night. Had to put a extra blanket on the bed.
I've had to do that the last couple of nights.
Yeah, we were in the 40s. I'm not complaining, especially when we look at what is coming up as we go close to that century.
We may get a little
mark. Taste
of that next week. Yeah,
maybe. Like maybe 97.
Midweek, I think we're looking at mid-90s. Yeah.
Anyway, we're all saddled up here and ready to launch into the first weekend of April. It is Friday, April the 4th on the Buckmaster Show. And Jim Nitzel, we liked Jim's work so much last week as my media co-host that we have him back again today, Jim Nitzel, who spent more than 35 years with the Tucson Weekly as senior editor, now doing really nice things as a political reporter for TucsonSentinel.com. And part of his salary is paid by Report for America, correct?
It is, and the remainder is paid by the folks in this community. So we appreciate the support of folks who help out our nonprofit news organization. I think it's more important than ever as we see many of our mainstream media outlets struggling to do the job they used to do.
And, of course, Jim, we thank you for all of your support to the work that you've been a real enhancement to my work, not only 22 years at Arizona Illustrated, but now with the radio show for 15 years. So thanks for being available for the show.
It's a pleasure. And again, appreciate your support as well, Bill.
All right. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. I'm not out at Green Things. They have the naming rights to the studio, and we're glad they do, at the Bustos Media Center. I mean, I wouldn't mind being out at Green Things, but we are here in Central Tucson, where we have five radio stations now under one roof. They're all doing very well, especially that new acquisition, the Drive 101.7. Wow. Ratings are looking really good for that radio station. This one, though, of course, is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk. As I mentioned, in our 15th year now of the radio program, we have our worldwide live listening and podcast at buckmastershow.com. When we do the live line, Sean and the gang sponsor that. Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management sponsor our live line. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com. We already mentioned Jim Nitzel and, of course, Dylan Smith, the founder over there, 16 years or so, Jim.
That guy's amazing.
I know.
Well, the whole crew there is amazing. Let me say that. But that Dylan had the foresight to create one of the first online news sites and has sustained
the country, really,
for so long. A lot of these things come and go, but Dylan has made sure this one's here to stay.
Yeah, other media partners, Dan Shear, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun, and Tucson Spotlight, Caitlin Schmidt, with the latest entry into the online news service. Okay, our Friday Focus interview today, General Ted Maxwell, who leads the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as president and CEO. Since 2018, nearly 34 years of military service, including 15 years in active duty Air Force and additional 19 in the Air National Guard here in Arizona. He retired as a two-star Major General in 2018, his final military position, a commander of the Arizona Air National Guard. He's doing some great things here at this radio station. He's carving out a niche as a radio personality and hosts what is becoming a very popular show, 7 to 9 on Tuesday mornings here on KVOI. The show's going well, isn't it, General? And welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate being on your show. I appreciate you finally bringing me in for one of these Friday afternoon ones. I heard Jim Nitzel was going to come back for a repeat, he must have heard that you were talking to me, and he said, all right, this is going to be fun.
I can't wait.
He's got like four or five sheets already lined up in front of him, all the questions he's going to ask.
Yeah, and this is the first appearance for General Maxwell as the Friday Focus interviewee.
And to your point about the morning voice, since you gave me an opportunity to put the plug in for that, it's, you know, the five hosts 5 days, five different hosts, five different topic areas, and five different perspectives is something we're hoping really is catching on the drive time. We've talked about how valuable this drive time hour is.
People in and out of the car, they've been doing shopping, they've been at conferences, you know that. You've been at lunches, they've been at yoga, Pilates, whatever.
And so it's important. I mean, it's a different format. We originally jump into, Son, had that 9 to 10 o'clock hour. Mm-hmm. And it was a pretty quiet hour. It was something we could do. Not a lot of callers. We're trying to work in even more
that
callers
was your
now
spring training.
Time.
That was your spring
you
training.
That was amateur hour. Trust me, sometimes I think it's still amateur hour. So it's an experience. But on Tuesdays, we talk about engagement. We mm-hmm. talk about getting involved in the community. And it's funny because jump in was an hour and now I'm 2 hours. And what I'm finding is the guests that I'm bringing in and the folks that are calling in and the people that are getting, they all want to talk about how they can get engaged. And they're all passionate about this region. They're passionate mm-hmm. about the Tucson-Pima County region. They're passionate about the state. And they want to get and hear stories from people who have made a difference, whether it's through running for elected office or serving on boards and commissions, first responders, healthcare workers, educators, mm-hmm. you know, the nonprofits. There's just so many ways you can get engaged mm-hmm. and make this a better community. And that, I think, has got some of the traction. Of course, there's a little bit of politics talk. Sure. There's a little bit of other things as well.
You've become such a good talker that I've actually... you're now in the rotation for the Buckmaster Vacation Relief, which seems to be expanding by the day.
I was going to say, that's a growing business.
Started off as 2 weeks. Now we're a little bit more pushing toward three, but I think that's it for three. But Ted will be hosting the show May 21st, and Ninsel I've got down on May 14th. And then Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel, I'll actually be calling in to Ryan's travel show, hopefully from French Polynesia.
And think what you're going to, that's going to be a mutual beneficial conversation. It's going to be
It
great.
Will be. Anyway, let's take care of business. Jim, we do need to mention that the general wears several hats. So there's plenty to talk about today. He's a member of the 7-member Arizona State Transportation Board, because he represents Pima County on the ADOT board. Wait a minute, I've got this all mixed up. No, yes.
You've got it right.
No, I got it right. And then as the ADOT representative on the 9-member Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors. Jim, why don't you start the questioning?
Oh, absolutely. So I think we've seen an interesting week following Liberation Day and the announcement of all these tariffs. Southern Arizona obviously has a lot of dependence on trade here for our own economy, but I think this is having an effect on the economy not only in the United States but across the world. Your thoughts on these tariffs? Good move? Bad move?
The tariffs. I'm going to. If you listen to a lot of the business organizations and what we've come out and say, and you listen to a lot of the economists, what we come out and say, tariffs are historically not good for business. And there's going to be no difference here. The costs to consumers, the costs are going to increase the amount of trade that's going to be impacted down on the border. We are a border community. Mexico is our state's number one trading partner by a long range. It's not even close. And we're going to feel the impacts. We had a meeting at SLC a couple weeks ago where we focused on the potential impacts of trades and tariffs on the region. And it's everything we always hear about, oh, it's going to be the big vehicles, it's going to be the drive. And I do believe tariffs may drive a resurrection into manufacturing here in this country, but we can't do it overnight. It's not going to be turned on tonight. So there's going to be a fiscal impact. Mm-hmm. But we forget there's even smaller impacts. One of the individuals that spoke to us, their job is to work as a broker to help with tariffs coming from Mexico back and forth across our southern border. And people forget cars quite often go across that border 3 or 4 times until they're complete. So there's a lot of movement. But they were pointing out we're missing the idea of even the small businesses inside of Mexico that support us. Perfect example is a 25% tariff on a company in Mexico that daily transports $1,000 worth of tortillas into the Nogales area.
Really?
Is going to go out of business.
Oh my
or their business is going to change. Because 25%, you think about the profit margin on the $1,000 sales of tortillas, they can't take the $250 hit. So we forget the impact on the little companies. We always think about on the big companies. And throughout Arizona, we're driven in the Southern Arizona. A lot of our economy is that small businesses. You know, the city of Tucson focuses on small business growth. Well, any of their goods or supplies that are coming across the border are going to be impacted. So, Jim, to your question, I think the tariffs are going to have a big impact. You're seeing it in the reaction of the stock market right now. It's taken an enormous hit in the last several weeks. And a lot of it's the uncertainty. Markets don't like uncertainty. Business investors don't like uncertainty. And there's still so much to be said about what goes on. I mean, I've seen, read some arguments in favor of why these tariffs will be a good thing, but they all come down to negotiation and power. The best tariff that we could have inside Mexico, Canada, and the U.S. would be 0% going across all the borders. That means U.S. isn't paying tariffs on the products coming up. If we truly turned in Mexico, Canada, the U.S., North America back into a free trade zone, think about what could happen then, because everybody'd be not only competing, but we'd have the same access to prices. And where we were the experts or the suppliers would go beneficial, not just for America, but it would also be beneficial for Mexico and Canada.
Now, the president seems pretty committed to this approach. Are you hopeful that Congress might step in here and say, this is our job, we will decide tariffs?
I think what you may see at some point, the Congress will make a statement. I'm not saying it's going to be on this tariffs. There's a big, you can see the discussions already going back in D.C. on our series of checks and balances. Whose jobs, you know, whose responsibility is it? You know, what's Congress's role? What's the executive office role? And what's the judicial role? A lot of those issues are still being played out. What I do think you will continue to see as far as the tariffs go, you're going to see them come and go. You're going to see changes. You're going to see uncertainty. So that's going to continue. And that's going to make it very difficult, I think, for people to step in. But the business community and the businesses, the economy will speak. Everything I've seen about that talks about the how the strategy of tariffs could, in the long run, be beneficial for the U.S. It always is precipitated with the comment, but there's risk. Because if this happens and this happens and this happens, a.k.a. the growth of industry back in the U.S. and it happens in a timely manner, then this all could lead to a even stronger U.S. economy. But if things go wrong, if inflation ticks up, where we can't get lower interest rates, we can't get reinvestment into the country, it's going to have a potentially real damaging impact.
Will the costs, the tariffs, perhaps affect the RTA, the Regional Transportation Authority, NEXT program?
The biggest concern I have with it could, well, let me answer that question right away, is yes, it could, because it depends where our supplies for our roads and infrastructure come from. Now, the majority of them we get here in the U.S., but probably not all of them. There's a lot of things, you know, the amount of steel we get from outside the country. We've got to have the ability to get all the steel inside the country if we're going to use it to build roads and girders and bridges and all that. So could it have it? Yes. Our biggest worry right now on the infrastructure thing is there have been a lot of agreements from the federal government to provide funding, such as Interstate 10. And right now, all indications are that funding will still come to us. But again, with a lot of the unsuredness, when the initial announcement was made that everything in IJA was, we're not doing it, and then they reclassified and said, okay, it's the stuff we're talking about for the green energy. For us in the state of Arizona, we spent almost $400,000 creating a plan that would meet and fit the requirements to leverage the $76 million that we were going to have from the federal government to place electric charging stations every 50 miles, which would expand the availability and the access and the ability for electric vehicles to go longer distances. And, you know, there's a lot of folks that will have one of, you know, an electric vehicle and a gas vehicle, and the gas vehicles the ones for their long trips. So all that was in play, and now it's been reversed. I don't believe that the majority of the funding towards infrastructure is in jeopardy from the federal government. Why? Infrastructure is the backbone of not only business and the economy, but it's also the backbone of quality of life and people's ability to get up and move around.
All right, we're going to pause here, Jim.
Oh, no, do you, no, 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 that, we can take just the break. To clarify, it's the Interstate 10 segment that's two lanes between.
Correct.
As you're approaching Phoenix, that last stretch.
The thing that will create from basically Tucson to Phoenix, different segments. We are under the full understanding that all the money that has been committed both from the state and federal government to help complete those three lanes on each side.
Yeah.
You know, we could argue if we need four lanes, but to three lanes on each side is still on the books and is still being told to us coming.
Okay.
The only thing we saw from the IIJA is going to be those specific for charging stations and green energy efforts.
All right. Wrapping up segment number one. Segment number two will be coming up with General Ted Maxwell and Jim Nintzel of TucsonSentinel.com. But before we go to our recorded breaks, we're just delighted to welcome a new sponsor this week to our lineup here. Pima Council on Aging now is a partner with the Buckmaster Show. Support comes from Pima Council on Aging. PCOA's mission is to promote dignity, respect for aging, independence in the lives of Pima County's older adults and their families. PCOA offers vital programs and services, accurate information, and advocacy that could impact aging adults. Please check out their website, PCOA.org. And once again, thanks to the people over at Pima Council on Aging for joining the fine roster of partnerships that make the Buckmaster Show possible.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. We begin segment two with General Ted Maxwell, who leads the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. He is our Friday Focus interview. He's the CEO and president over at the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and he is also back in 2021, Governor Ducey appointed the general to represent Pima County on the seven-member Arizona State Transportation Board. He's also the ADOT representative on the nine-member Regional Transportation Authority Board of Directors. Jim Ninsel is here, political reporter for the TucsonSentinel.com. Jim, go ahead.
What about the RTA? You've got about a year left before that tax runs out. There was some talk you might go for a November election, but I think you've got, 6 weeks to narrow down a lot of things to make that deadline. Is it more likely that we're going to see that election next year?
If I was a gambler, which I might dabble in sports, you know, some of the new sports stuff out there. When I say dabble, I'm married to an accountant, so it's small numbers. But I think more than likely it's looking towards May, but I'm not giving up hope on maybe we can get something in January. I think we're closer than a lot of people think. I think 414 is probably making the city reconsider some of their positions. But I think it's also making everybody else look at some positions. So to answer that first question, probably May, but I'm still holding out hope that we may be able to get it done by November. I think there is a change in the board leadership. If anybody watched the last board, we've got, Roxy Valenzuela is the new mayor of the city of South Tucson. So she's replacing Paul Diaz, new tribal chairman, and Chairman Hernandez with the Pascayaki. We've also got a new mayor out in Marana, because the untimely and unfortunate passing of Ed Honey. John Post is now taking that role. And then you had Adelita Grijalva. And so it looks like she may have it was funny because a couple weeks before she came up, told me, and this was obviously before the passing of her father as well, I'm looking forward to working with you on the RTA board. Well, we may have had one meeting with her on the RTA board. So they've got to decide on the 15th who the representative is going to be. So there's a little education. That's one of the things, Jim, to your question, is going to make it, I think, hard to get to something by June, because we have to have it to the Board of Supervisors for June to have a November election. There's a different, I've talked with Mayor Valenzuela in South Tucson. I know what they want and what they want to get into it. I don't think you'll see a lot of change out of Marana, but we've got a lot of education. We've got new members. So they've got to learn of how, we've gone through about a 4 or 5 year, probably way too long process getting to where we are now. And now we're asking these new members, 4 out of the 9, to come in and get a 1 month refresher and then start making decisions. So I think it's going to be a challenge. I have a long push to have it sooner than later. And a lot of it was because I thought we might need 2 shots at the ballot. But I think we may find ourselves in a position much like Maricopa was with their recent Prop 479, which is their third extension of a 20-year road transportation pass. It passed about 62% to 58 to 38. Let me do my math. And so they've got their funding in place, but they were up against under the gun.
Watching the process play out 20 years ago, it seemed like there was more community unity towards the RTA. You had, Bob Walkup was mayor and he was all on board. Chuck Huckleberry was county administrator and he was pulling people together for this thing. And it does seem like the city of Tucson has had, its share of complaints about getting its fair share. Some of the outlying suburbs feel like the city of Tucson is getting too much, and just disputes over the rapid transit bus or what have you. The environmentalists are upset about the wildlife crossings. So I'm wondering, are you concerned that you're kind of herding cats together to get this thing into a place where you have enough community support from the leadership that voters feel comfortable moving forward with it?
Well, that's absolutely a concern, and I'd like to refresh on the RTA one, the first one. Here was the big difference back then. We didn't have an RTA one. We didn't have a half-cent sales tax We didn't have an RTA prior to that.
Yeah,
we didn't have a half-cent sales tax. We had failed several times when done in a different manner. What was different then is the Citizens Advisory Committee that got together and put together the plan. They had all the hard discussions and negotiations as part of putting together the plan. The technical management committee team that put together this, whether they could do these projects and the order and how it should be done. That entire team, when they finally brought it to the RTA board, because the RTA board had existed since we were given the authority to have one. We just didn't have any funding stream. When they brought that to the board, there was already agreement, unanimous agreement around the table. Not necessarily unanimous agreement at every individual city council or town council, but you had unanimous agreement amongst the 9 members of the board. And then they immediately became the campaign advocates. So that group that built it became the immediate advocates, and we had over 220 folks that were going out in the Speaker's Bureau to talk about it, because they all understood that they had to give something up to get what they thought would be better for the community. This last system, the way we did it when it went through COVID and everything, we did some restructuring of how you got on the Citizens Advisory Committee, and the Citizens Advisory Committee was people who were all staunch advocates for one of the different measures, whether it was wildlife crossings in the environmental side, whether it was transit, whether it was road expansion. And that made it difficult, because when they brought a plan to us on the board, they did not have unanimous consent. They barely had majority consent. And even then, there were 2 plans that had gotten over that 50+1 mark. So I think it's a different situation 20 years later. My biggest fear is if you look at a lot of the expansion, both of the economy, of the quality of life, of the conditions of the roads in Maricopa, it's because they've now are on their third. They had a 20-year advantage of us. They've got another 20 years going forward. And I think ultimately, when you ask the question of all the elected leaders, was RTA-1 beneficial for your community?
Mm-hmm.
Their answers have been unanimously yes, absolutely. But then they say, but I don't know if I like RTA next as well. Well, nobody ever likes it. I've said from the beginning, we will know we have a good plan when everybody has something in it they don't like, but they see the benefit from the remainder of the program.
General Ted Maxwell with us, our Friday Focus interview today. Jim Nintzel's here from Tucson Sentinel. General, Southern Arizona Leadership Council, the group that you shepherd, joined with the Metro Chamber of Commerce, Sun Corridor, very much saying and urging the citizens of the city of Tucson to say no, and they did with a resounding no to the sales tax increase, the proposition that would have raised the city's sales tax by a half cent. Where do you and other community leaders say Tucson should go from here?
Well, the thing that I think is going to be a challenge is the 2026 budget process is way down the road. And I think now speaking on behalf of SALC, we understand that we've provided some input, we've provided some feedback, we've attended the budget meetings. We're going to be more present, because when we said we're here to help, we really are. What I think our biggest concern is, we'll ignore the budget as a whole, but there's $767 million in the general fund. And we do believe that there's better ways to establish those priorities. Now, Jim asked a question at a press conference that I was at, of somebody else, but I ended up coming up and answering it when I came back up. And what is there bad in this? What doesn't the city of Tucson need in this proposal? Well, you know what? They did. All the things they outlined, they could use. There was nothing in the plan that didn't make sense. But the fact of the matter was, in our opinion, there was not significant funding to fix or significantly impact any of the issues. Every single one of the dollar lines, somebody would go, this is best, this is good for us. They've already said, peeps, the $1 million funding that they've been providing to early childhood education. SALC was part of standing up peeps. We're strong advocates for it. But you know what? When somebody said, you're going to lose that money now, I said, is that really a core function of the city of Tucson? The cities should focus on functions that only cities and municipalities, and this goes for all of them, not just the city of Tucson, they should be focusing on their North Stars. It doesn't always have to be what's in the charter. That's
police,
a good place to start.
Police, fire,
roads, and parks and rec.
Okay.
Infrastructure under roads.
Four-legged stool.
And I'll even give them some of the housing stuff. I understand that. But when you've got limited funds, just like, you know, it's a lot more complicated than a family budget, but when you've got limited revenue, you need to look at two things. One, raise the revenue, which they were ready to do by sales tax. What we said is we'd like to see them, let's raise the revenue by expanding the business opportunities, making the ease of business. Let's, you increase sales throughout the city, your revenue is going mm-hmm. up. But back to the prioritization and the decision-making. What are the functions that only a municipality can do? You can't privatize the police force.
No.
Okay. It doesn't work. Parks. Are we going to turn all the parks and recs into a private function? Because if you turn all the parks into private functions, we're going to start charging people to get through the door to fund those. You can't. And those need to be your priorities. Now, there are a lot of other things that were in 411 that are what I'd call the next level. And every single investment in that, or lack of investment, that's going to impact those four things, four or five or however many you determine, are purely city and municipality requirements. We get that. But you have to go through a process where you're deciding, okay, before we give this $1 million to early childhood education, and SLC is already working a program to try to expand the business and other community efforts to make up for that loss of funding, because we do believe early childhood education, it will change our community for the better. But in the case of this, they've got to go through a process where they think, okay, if we know the most important goal of a municipality is to ensure the safety of its citizens, mm-hmm. if we're going to spend this money on shade trees, and that's actually polling pretty well right now on the current economic survey for the city. That was polling really well at first. It's kind of dropped down. But if that's the priority, how does that impact the things that only the city can? Because you know what? There's a lot of different ways to increase the amount of shade trees in this town. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of work that nonprofits do and others organizations do and private ventures can do. Mm-hmm. But there's some that we flat out can't. And you've got to make sure that those are being funded to a level that, A, they're successful, and B, you've got some surety of the funding.
Sounds like priorities.
I know there was a lot of people upset mm-hmm. about when some of the argument was the mayor and council are failing to establish their priorities. And the only time I'd say that becomes true is when you hear, well, we're being asked to provide a lot, so we need more money. Well, mm-hmm. No. There's a lot of other folks that can provide some of the stuff you're being asked for.
Let me ask you about Medicaid, because
that's a big one.
That's a big one, and it certainly looks like the Republicans, at least in the House of Representatives, are looking at a pretty significant $880 billion over 10 years, I think, is the number that's being kicked around. You wrote a letter to members of the Congress, well, not only you, but business organizations across
yes,
the
sir.
Board wrote a letter to the congressional delegation saying this is misguided, and I think you said potentially catastrophic cuts. And can you talk a little bit about why that is so harmful to the entire healthcare system in Arizona?
So what the Congress is going through right now, they're going to try to get to a budget in 6 months through a process called reconciliation. Okay. And reconciliation, what some people miss, because you hear all this, you read about it in the paper, they're coming for Social Security, they're coming for Medicare, they're coming for Medicaid. Well, under reconciliation, they can't touch Social Security or Medicare, but they can Medicaid. And that's the concern that a lot of people have. They're calling right now for about the White House's budget wants a $880 million reduction in the Department of HHS, which large portion of that money is Medicaid. Here's the truth. 50% of the births in the state of Arizona are occurring to people who are covered by Medicaid. If the states receive decreased funding to support, and Medicaid in Arizona is access, and it's easier to just say access than give you the actual, words that make up access mm-hmm. as the shortened term. If you cut the funding to the state of Arizona, some people go, could the states make up that funding? Well, maybe, but then they're going to just demolish their entire other budget. So the only way to do that, if your shortfall, is to limit the number of people who are now eligible for it.
And there's a trigger law.
Yes, and there's a trigger law.
That automatically Absolutely. Reduces the eligibility if the federal and contribution drops below 90%.
And what's going to happen if all of a sudden fewer people have health care coverage in our state? Guess what's going to become their primary source of their general medical health care.
The emergency room.
Nailed it. And that is the fact of the matter, is hospitals are required to provide care. Individual medical offices, private medical offices aren't. So if you show up and you don't have a way of being a guaranteed payer, your local doctor that you may see, or you can say, sorry, people will delay their taking care of medical issues. They will show up at the emergency room and use that as the source. And what's that going to mean for the rest of us? The lines are going to get longer there for things when you have, unless you are in a life or death situation, what's an emergency to you may not go to the front of the line. You're going to be behind all these other folks who don't have the ability to get care elsewhere. And it's going to put stress and pressure on the hospital system like we've never seen before. And so that is the worry of why we believe, when you hear the business community say this could be catastrophic.
I think the estimate I heard from Senator Kelly was 750,000 people would lose their health insurance.
And I've heard numbers as low as 400,000 people, but it doesn't matter. It's a huge number.
Right.
Either one will have a huge impact.
And those people suffer their health consequences as well, but also hospitals, uncompensated care, they lose more money.
And when it comes, yes, absolutely. And there's a lot of things that can be changed for more efficiencies inside the healthcare system, including from the payers. From the insurance companies, from the government, the hospitals provide the service and then go about collecting money. Right now, Tucson Medical Center has 45 full-time personnel focused on one thing, and that's collecting the money for services they've already provided. We have to streamline those kind of systems.
45 people.
There is a huge opportunity for efficiencies in our healthcare system as a whole. But the most important thing we have to ensure is accessibility first and affordability second. There's a lot of ways to do that.
Let's take a break right here. We'll keep General Maxwell around for segment number three. And Jim Nintzel will have some idea on what's going on with the race that is now starting to develop to replace. And it will be a fast track race to replace United States Representative, the late Raul Grijalva. Buckmaster Seg 3 is coming up right after this short break.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. Welcome back. It's segment number three on our Friday Focus interview today. We kept our Friday Focus interviewee over for segment number three. Segment number three usually is kind of Bill with the co-media co-host, who is Jim Ninsel from TucsonSentinel.com. But we still had a few items get to. Jim, you want to have a quick one with the general?
Absolutely. You mentioned childcare earlier, and SALC has been very involved with supporting the PEEPS program at the county, which has provided a lot of scholarships for local folks, local families that need it. But Governor Katie Hobbs was in town a couple weeks ago talking about how she'd like to see the state legislature step up and provide more funding, which, as you pointed out, it's not really the city's job or the county's job to be doing PEEPS. It has traditionally been a responsibility of the state with federal matching funds. And what do you think of the governor's proposal to add $120 million to the child care program?
I think it's a great idea. I'm not sure this is the year. The budget's going to be rough. It's going to be tight. I'd love to see more state funding for education. It's interesting because you get on the education topic so much. Everybody wants to make it local. You know, it's a state responsibility. It's pretty clear that the Department of Education, the legislature, they support so much of when it comes to the line of funding. I'm going to tell you who else I think needs to step up, and that's one of the part of the conversation we're starting to have is the business community. There's a lot of organizations that you want to talk about a benefit to attract talent, offer them free early childhood education or childcare.
Talk about why it is important for the community to support this kind of early childhood education.
So there's a huge difference when you enter kindergarten, first grade, wherever you decide to start, either in a public school or private school. There you can see a huge difference generally, but between the children that have had the opportunity to go through an early childhood education program, particularly a high quality first things first type approach, and those who haven't. So it gives you a leap. We've heard a lot of the people that are against it say, well, if you don't put them into a high quality school system, that they lose it. They stop making as much progress, but the thing they don't lose is the differential that they came in with. That differential normally stays there. And the real thing is, if you look at the generational studies from programs that have started back in the 70s, and you look at the generational studies, any child who's been in an early childhood education environment is less likely at the age of 18 to be on narcotics, to be in jail, and to go on to higher education or trade school and effectively employed. Because it's not just learning to be introduced to numbers and to letters. What you learn in a lot of high-quality early childhood education is social skills, mm-hmm. how to work with others, how to get along. And too often right. now we find our young K-3 education teachers having to worry about hurting the masses versus teaching.
And there's an economic element of it too, though, for people who are working and businesses, right?
Well, and that's why I say I think there's a role the business community can play in this that we maybe haven't stepped up enough yet in. And it's not just donations. You know, PEEPS is a very specific program that's providing scholarships through the county. And yes, we could probably funnel more money there. But I think there's a role that some companies and some businesses could look at, especially some of the larger corporations, to see how they provide benefit by offering those kind of benefits, not just salary, not just wages, but benefits to allow single parents, two-income parents, you know, that both parents want. But bottom line is, it's not all the families that have two working parents are because they need the money. Sometimes it is, but it's also because both those parents might have careers and want to continue to work. So there's child care and the lack of child care and lack of that early education is going to make a difference. And to your point on the benefit for is generational. Those kids coming out of early childhood education are more likely to succeed and enter the workforce.
A big advocate for the libraries just sent me a text saying, why is the library tax paying for all of this for the PEEPS program?
Because, interesting enough, when you look at the library taxing districts, and this is something that SLC was involved in getting clarification from, mm-hmm. you could go throughout the state of Arizona, and when you talk about early childhood literacy, and getting those programs that will teach early childhood literacy, the majority of the counties said, we can do that already. Why do we? And they were actually opposed to making this language change, but we can do that already. But at the time, the ruling from the Pima County attorney to the board was that the language wasn't clear. So can you use this library district to focus on early childhood literacy or not? And we're going, that's the basis of a library. So what happened was it got clarification, and that became the best source for the county's funding, for the county's portion of the funding. There's other funding that comes into it as well. And our point is this PEEPS program doesn't have to be funded completely by the public sector.
All right, we're out of time. General Ted Maxwell, thank you very much for being the Friday Focus interview. Before we go, Jim Nensel, anything quick on the race here to replace Raul Grijalva?
I think the two best-known candidates are certainly his daughter, Adelita Grijalva, who mm-hmm. announced this week, and the former state lawmaker, Daniel Hernandez, who announced last week. And but then you got a whole other gang of, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 people who seem to want to run now. It's not quite that high.
They may not get signatures. So,
and those are due in a week.
Oh, they are.
It's a week from Monday. A week from Monday for a special election, and early voting starts in June. So this one's coming up fast.
And just to say, it took Supervisor Grijalva less than one day to get all her signatures.
I think several hours, actually.
That was sending a message to anybody who else may want to collect signatures.
I think so. Jim, quickly about TucsonSentinel.com, how do people support you?
Oh, you go to our website. There's an opportunity to donate on the website. And, of course, we would be immensely grateful, and we are immensely grateful for all of our Watchdog Club members, and certainly invite more people to join up and help us continue delivering the journalism we're delivering to the community.
And General Maxwell, who will be your guests on your program 7 to 9 Tuesday morning?
Trying to keep the diversity of thought on the engagement hour. Blake Morlock's going to be coming in. I'm going to have Juan Siscomani for a quick session. And then John Lai, who runs the newest major headquarters that's staying in Tucson, Mr. Car Wash. That's now listed on New York Stock Exchange.
I'm a member of Mr. So great news. Okay. General, thank you very much for coming in. We'll look for your work on Tuesdays from 7 to 9. And Jim, of course, we'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. Coming up next, Weekend Watch with our sister station, 101.7 The Drive, right after this.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. It is time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Silver City in Grant County makes a great weekend getaway. Start your planning now for an enchanting visit to the Land of Enchantment by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Here to join us with some great tips for the weekend, Leslie Lois from 101.7 The Drive. Hey, Leslie, what's going on this weekend?
Hey, there's a lot of stuff. But
Big stuff. A couple of signature events.
Yes, yeah. The Tucson Folk Festival is happening. It actually kicks off today, going through Sunday. They have over 150 live performances across six stages.
Wow.
I know, and it's all kind of happening around downtown. Mm-hmm. So just go downtown and walk around. Mm-hmm. It's going to be beautiful this weekend. So you might want to check that out.
This is their 40th anniversary edition.
Oh, really?
I think it is.
Wow. Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I think that's right. So they didn't get off the bus yesterday. So that's a great event. And the variety that when we get some really top talent that comes to this. So check it out, Folk Festival.
The weather's going to be beautiful for that. Also going to be beautiful to sip on some wine at the zoo, because it is Wine Gone Wild at the Reed Park Zoo. This is happening tomorrow night, 6 to 8:30. There's going to have a wine tasting from regional wineries, distilleries. You can check out the animals. They have light food sampling. I went last year. It was so much fun. Tickets cost between $75 for $75, $50 if you're a designated driver. Again, I went last year and I just had a blast with it.
Well, we love Reed Park Zoo, one of our sponsors here on the Buckmaster Show, and they do such a great job, over 400 animals. they're really one of the finest zoos for a mid kind of size city in the United States.
I agree. I really think they've done a great job there. Yeah. So yeah, go check that out. And, big hockey weekend for us, the Tucson Roadrunners.
I know you're very much engaged when it comes to the ice.
I am, yes. So they only have six games left for the end before the end of the season. They are right now fighting really hard. They've got knocked out of the playoffs right now, but the team right above them, they're playing this weekend. Bakersfield, I believe it's the Condors. Mm-hmm. They need to win these next two games if they want to get in the playoffs. Go support them. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the puck drops, and then they have the game on Sunday at 4 o'clock. This is at the TCC as well.
Well, we're glad professional hockey is going to be sticking around for a while here.
Yes.
And I know you love hockey coming from Wisconsin, and I come from Chicago, and growing up with the Blackhawks, and I know you really followed hockey all your life, haven't you, Leslie?
I have, yes. The Admirals have been around since 1970 in Milwaukee.
The Milwaukee Admirals.
Yes.
Of kind of the Midwest, or the, is that like a triple A?
No, they're an AHL team.
They are
for
AHL.
For Nashville, which is very interesting because they're not exactly close.
No, not really a geographical connection, really, with Nashville and Milwaukee. Anyway, Leslie Lois, we will look for your work at 101.7 The Drive. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend, Christophon. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt. Engineer and producer Tom Fairbanks. Tom does a great job for us and the entire team here at KVOI and Bustos Media. All of us have the same wish for each of you, and that is have a great weekend.